if everybody's kind of on the same page, like I said, with our rituals of reading all the wishes that we get in our cauldron, that, you know, you can feel the energy of people like wanting these things for these people. Sometimes, you know, people write down, I hope to get my new job in like next month, and we will read it out loud and then toss it in the cauldron and just say, blessed be, so mote it be. And you can just kind of feel that from everybody looking like, you will get this new job.
Welcome to the Cosmic Keys Podcast. This is going to be your episode for August 5th to 11th. And today we are talking with Olivia, the Witch of Wonderlust. And she is a fellow witchy YouTuber and blogger. She's got a great community on YouTube and Instagram. And we talked to her all about witchcraft, her own spiritual path, and what it's like to be in a coven. But before we get into that, we have our forecast of the week. And last week's card, I believe, was the Queen of Wands. So how was the Queen of Wands for you?
It's funny. I sort of had a few... I was noticing a lot of women briefly kind of that reminded me of the Queen of Wands just by the way they were presenting themselves and sort of walking around proudly, I would say.
Were they manspreading like the Queen does?
I didn't see any manspreading, but I just saw a lot of women sort of strutting their stuff. Like, I was out driving around a lot this week, and I was like, Queen of Wands there, Queen of Wands there. And I just got that vibe that there was that, like, proud Leo energy in the air this week, for sure. And we also, you know, enjoyed the new moon in Leo, the Mercury going direct in Cancer after the meat grinder month of July. So it's definitely that Leo vibe all week. How about you, though?
Yeah, you know, when Mercury was still in retrograde, I was flying on Monday and trying to get from New York back to Chicago, and all of the flights were basically canceled due to mechanical errors and, like, issues with, you know, the tower and the FAA and whatever. And I was just like, oh my god, this is the most Mercury retrograde thing to be happening to me right now. Mm-hmm. I was like stuck at the airport for like 8 hours. It was miserable. But then, you know, getting back here, and I was definitely feeling that Queen of Wands energy. I even like bought some more cute outfits, because maybe the Queen of Wands is in my life. They're like, I want some cute sundresses. Let's embrace it, you know, might as well.
Yeah, when Mercury went direct, it was sort of more pronounced, I feel like, because when it goes direct, it slows down and stops, and that's kind of when it's like grinding to a halt and messing more stuff up. And when it was at those degrees in Cancer, it was basically opposite of Pluto too, and Pluto just can be destructive and uncomfortable in a lot of ways too. It's funny too, we did our episode on psychedelics last week, and I saw an article that was like, what's going on with the eyes of Silicon Valley CEOs? And it was showing like all these clips of like the like Mark Zuckerberg and like the knockoff Steve Jobs guy, whoever the new Apple CEO is.
Yeah.
And their pupils were huge.
Oh, you think they're microdosing?
That's the argument they were making. But I was like, ugh, I don't like those guys. I don't want to be like them. And it made me question whether microdosing was actually cool if they're doing it and creating our modern day technocracy. So I just, it was funny that was on my mind this week too, after last week's episode.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we're going to start with the card of the week. And this is an extra special card of the week because, fellow listeners, it is Dan's birthday today. So Woo! Everyone needs to wish him a happy birthday. Woohoo! And this card, I mean, it better be a good one. I'm going to feel really bad if we get the tower.
For my entire year? Yeah, I'll decide if I want to read this as my card of the year after I see the card, but
that's probably a good strategy. You don't want to put too much pressure on it.
It's really funny though. I think I've mentioned before that I historically hate my birthday, and I think it's because of all my Scorpio placements. It's like when I hit my birthday, it's like, ugh, I didn't ask to be be born. It's like I get like real like angsty on my birthday, and it's sort of like PTSD from being born with such a gnarly chart in a way. But I don't mean that in a serious way at all. It's very subtle. It's like, ugh, my birthday. Ugh.
You're probably the only one. I love birthdays. I think they're fun.
I sort of hate birth. Well, it depends on what I'm doing, and it's like, I don't know. I love Leo season, and I love being a Leo, but my Scorpio ascendant conjunct the moon conjunct Pluto is like so self-loathing, and sometimes on my birthday I'm just like, ugh. But I'd say I'm halfway there today. I'm feeling pretty good, so we'll see what card we pull after that amazing statement.
Are we ready?
Yeah, let's see.
Page of Wands.
All right.
Ooh, woo. Okay, this is good.
More fire.
You know why this is good? Because Page of Wands is all about exploration, and there's like pyramids in the background. And I know you've been talking about how you want this year to be the year of travel for you. Like, you want to like get out there and maybe even go abroad or something like that. That's the first thing that kind of comes to mind for me with the Page of Wands. Really that kind of youthful energy, optimism, like you're not cynical yet from the world. Mm-hmm. And you're just kind of ready to explore new things, explore new places, and embrace that kind of mindset. And one of the things that listeners, you'll hear in our interview with Olivia, we were talking about like labels and how we define ourselves. Mm-hmm. And Dan, you mentioned that like you like to think of yourself as a seeker, like totally, that word, yeah. Seeker. And the Page of Wands makes me think of that. He's at kind of that, even the early stages still of uncovering, you know, in a way, you know, the meaning to life to a certain degree. And there's, because it's a Wands card, it's got that fire energy. We got that Leo energy coming through. But there's so much potential with this card because it is just the page. You know, it's leading up to something great. So I feel really good about this card. I feel like it indicates, if you do want to view it as like the card of your birthday, the card of your year, that you're going to have a lot of interesting adventures coming up.
Totally, yeah. Like we said last week, I turned 32 today, so that kicks off my ninth house perfection year, and the ninth house is all about foreign travel, exploration of higher learning and philosophy and religion, and it has a spiritual seeker vibe to it. And looking at, just besides my year ahead as a 32-year-old, looking at the week ahead, it's super Leo, super Sagittarian. So again, you're pulling these fiery cards when we're literally at the peak of summer, you know, fixed fire season. It's cool. I'm getting a weird deja vu feeling looking at this card. Did we pull this on any other week before?
We've gotten the Page of Pentacles a lot, I believe, but I'm not sure if we've gotten the Page of Wands.
I feel like we did once, and it might have been a week that you were traveling. You've been doing mm-hmm. a lot of travel this year. I'm looking at his salamander outfit. I'm digging that.
Yeah. It's a good one. And you see salamanders in pretty much all of the Wands court cards. And, you know, it's mostly kind of that lizard motif, like, you know, how they're comfortable in heat. So it's, again, that kind of indication of that fire energy that's coming through in the card.
Very cool. Well, I'm glad you pulled that. I really this year am feeling the Leo, the fire. And maybe it's because, like I've said before, June was really cloudy and sort of dreary. Eclipse season was very watery and stuff, and now that we're in Leo season, it's like fire. I think I'm gonna buy a beach pass too, and like start going to the Evanston beaches, which you have to buy a pass for, but starting August 1st, they're cheaper. So
yeah, you should totally do that. And I'd be curious from you guys, the listeners, you should send us a DM or comment on an Instagram post if you're really feeling the Leo energy this year, because I think we both are feeling it a lot right now.
Totally. So for our astrology for the week ahead, it's interesting. I would say we have a lot of Leo action and also a lot of Sagittarius action, because we have a few planets that are trining each other in Leo and Sag between certain planets and the fact that Jupiter is in Sag. So I get the Sag vibes when I look at the page of Wands. And
in what way? Like, how would you define Sagittarius?
Well, Sagittarius is all... The symbol of Sagittarius is the centaur shooting an arrow at a star in the distance. So it's really a... I think of a key word as Sag as a seeker, and sort of in the way that Aries is cardinal fire, it's all about initiating and starting new endeavors. Leo is fixed fire, so it's like a maintaining that fire in the heart, you know, and Sagittarius is mutable fire, so it's kind of like moving out into the next phase sort of with the fire energy. And when I think of Sagittarius, you know, it's like travel, it's bubbly and humorous, and like optimism is a huge key word as well. So with the page being related to travel and going on these like pyramid Middle East adventures or whatever, I totally think of Sagittarius too, because, and also like the ninth house is connected with Sagittarius, and the ninth house is foreign travel, exotic cultures, globetrotting. So that's what we're working with our card, and with Jupiter connecting with these Leo planets. We're getting this lots of fire right now. So first, when we start the week off, the moon is going to be waxing in Libra. So we start the week off with not a lot of planetary action, but the moon in Libra is, you know, growing in light towards our full moon in Aquarius, which happens on August 15th. So, you know, this week we hit the second quarter, a half moon on Wednesday in the middle of the week. But we start off with Libra. And then, you know, there's really no other outer planetary action until we get to Wednesday, which is when the Sun in Leo trines Jupiter in Sagittarius. So, you know, last week we had the Sun square Uranus in the beginning of the week, and then on Friday Venus squares Uranus, and then so that kind of shakes things up. That's kind of like an anxious energy, and that's a hard aspect between Uranus and Taurus and these Sun and Venus in Leo. But this week that we're looking at, after that shakeup, we're getting this trine, this flowing energy between, on Wednesday, the Sun in Leo and Jupiter in Sagittarius. So this is going to make you feel Sagittarian. It's going to make you feel a nice blend between Leo and Sag, where your identity gets this flowing, optimistic, fiery harmony going on. So it's going to be a nice aspect. You know, Jupiter is the greater benefic. Jupiter is the good luck, you know, treasure, lottery winning planet. And the Sun is yourself. It's your identity and your ego. So you're going to probably feel good on Wednesday when the Sun trines Jupiter. That day is also the day of a half moon in Scorpio. Interesting, because my natal moon is in Scorpio and my natal Sun is in Leo. So this is kind of like a flashback of my chart happening on Wednesday. But so, you know, the half moon in Leo where the Sun squares moon is a point of tension in a way, but it's sort of going to jolt you further into the week after you get this nice Sun trine Jupiter happening on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, the same thing happens because Venus is catching up to the Sun. So Venus at this point of the summer, you know, you think of Venus as like the morning star or an evening star because it can't go that far away from the Sun based on its orbit. Same thing with Mercury. And this week, Venus is very close to the Sun. It will go fully conjunct on the 14th. But this week, it's neither a morning or evening star because the rays of the Sun are sort of burning it out. But on Thursday, right after the Sun trine Jupiter, we get Venus trine Jupiter. So if you think back to last week when Sun and Venus squared Uranus and it might have caused anxiety, might have shook things up, this week, Wednesday and Thursday, that's going to have this nice positive resolved feeling of Jupiter hitting these planets. And Venus and Jupiter are the two benefic planets. When they're trining each other in fire signs, that's really a good sign. The moon will also be in Sagittarius, entering at 4:35 p.m. on Thursday. So again, that's yet another nice aspect. So Wednesday and Thursday are going to be good days, I would imagine, you know. So do something fun, get out in the sunshine, get your fires burning, and make the most of these days, because this is like the post meat grinder glow that we've been waiting for. So enjoy it this week. This week is all about enjoying that energy. Then on Friday, we get another nice aspect with the moon conjuncting Jupiter in Sagittarius. So again, every time once a month the moon does this, it's a great time for your emotions to feel this year-long Jupiter and Sagittarius vibe. It's a lucky aspect, and it's a feel-good aspect in general. So yeah, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, do something good on those days. Do something enjoyable and fun and Page of Wands like. Could be like a great 3-day spontaneous long day weekend to hit a lake house or road trip or something like that. You know, just make the most of it. And then finally for this week, we have a big day on Sunday. So I keep referring back to Jupiter being in Sagittarius, which is the ruler of Sagittarius is Jupiter. So that's why it's so nice to have Jupiter there this year. Well, Jupiter's been retrograde for the past few months, and it's been slowing down this week. And on Sunday, it actually stations direct at 9:37 a.m. Eastern time. So, you know, Jupiter's all around good. Most things happening with the expansive planet of Jupiter and Sag have been good and helpful. And when it goes retrograde, it's not that it's not helpful anymore. It's just like you're revisiting, you're rewinding this positive vibe, you know. And then on Sunday, right around, I want to say 15 degrees Sag, Jupiter actually stations direct. So that's kind of, after Sunday, Jupiter is going to be able to do even more good stuff for you on its way out of Sagittarius, when later in the year it'll enter Capricorn, and then shit will hit the fan then.
Oh, geez, what's going to happen?
Well, I guess, like, you know, we finished the meat grinder, and that was difficult and everything. Those are some serious hard planets doing hard stuff. And the whole time that this has been happening, Jupiter and Sag has been kind of like keeping us optimistic and feel good and everything. Well, when Jupiter enters Capricorn, it's not in its home sign anymore. It's not going to be as powerful. But the main thing is it's entering the meat grinder territory of Capricorn, you know, because Pluto's south node and Saturn are there. And when Jupiter moves through Capricorn, it's going to eventually conjunct those planets and sort of expand that gnarly energy, you know.
Oh, geez.
So
there's a sequel to the meat grinder, and it's coming up.
It is coming up. And the main thing is that Saturn and Pluto are going to go conjunct in Capricorn in 2020, actually in January 2020. And then later, I mean, we're thinking far ahead, but then when Jupiter hits them, it's going to blow it. It's going to make everything bigger because Jupiter expands. So, yeah, when we're looking at, you know, from the rest of 2019, take as much advantage of Jupiter and Sagittarius as you can. It's not going to be, you know, terrible with Jupiter and Capricorn, but Jupiter and Sag is one of the, like, best places for Jupiter to be, and it lasts for a year, so just keep that in mind. So yeah, on Sunday, Jupiter goes direct. Also, Mercury enters Leo. So Mercury started its retrograde in early Leo, moved backwards into Cancer, and then it went direct last week. So now that it's moving forward, by Sunday it re-enters Leo, and it's going to join up with all the other planets in Leo and add more Leo into your life. So in this case, it's going to be your speech and your communication and your thoughts are going to be colored by fixed fire Leo, the lion. So that'll be a nice thing, because Cancer is where the meat grinder and the eclipses happened. We want Mercury to just get out of that zone and just move forward into bright, sunny Leo. So again, two awesome things happening on that day. Then a semi-neutral, maybe bad, maybe good thing happening on Sunday is Uranus will go retrograde. So Uranus in Taurus, it's in this 8-year period of being in Taurus. It stations retrograde on Sunday. So this isn't anything to really freak out about, because outer planets go direct in retrograde all the time because they're so far out there. But on Sunday, that Uranian disruptive surprise energy is going to sort of hit a peak. So, you know, on Sunday, good things will be happening. Jupiter direct, Mercury entering Leo, and then with Uranus stationing retrograde, it's going to be like shake-up energy. So it'll be like good stuff amidst maybe a little bit of chaos, but overall good. And, you know, this is a good week in general. And Sunday the 11th is definitely a high-energy day with these things happening. So just make the most of that shift. Like, I feel like Uranus going retrograde that day is going to like blast you off, sort of, in a way, because Jupiter starts moving forward, Mercury moves forward through Leo, and Uranus will just like buzz as it stops in the sky and stations. It gives you that shake up. I hope there's no like natural disasters that day, because being in an Earth sign, you think of the symbolism of Uranus and Taurus, it's like this lightning bolt energy in Earth, which is hard and fixed. You kind of picture like volcanoes or earthquakes, and we have had a little bit of seismic activity this year. Like, there were some earthquakes in California during the eclipse season, but you know, we'll see how it manifests. It's Uranus in a fixed Earth sign, so we'll have to wait and see how that happens. But yeah, I think the card you pulled is definitely in alignment with the astrology of this week.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, yeah, I'm excited about it. I'm a bit worried about that natural disaster you mentioned. We'll see if that happens. I mean, we'll wait and see. Hopefully nothing bad happens. But overall, it looks good. I'm feeling good about it. Really feeling the Leo energy still. So yeah, I'm excited.
All right, guys, well, stay tuned for our awesome interview with the Witch of Wanderlust, Olivia.
Wanderlust, and she is a fellow YouTuber, and she has a great community on her website, and she talks about a wide range of topics about spirituality and witchcraft and fun things like that. So Olivia, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm always excited to talk to another fellow YouTuber. I'm still kind of a small fry in the YouTube game, but it's fun, you know, connecting with other people in the community. So yeah, we're really pleased to have you on. And one of the things that we usually start out our conversations with is asking about your childhood and kind of if you were raised with any particular religion or spirituality and how you ended up on your specific path.
Yeah, so I grew up Christian. My parents were both Christian, and it wasn't like strict per se. It was just kind of like that's what they believed. And we went to church a lot, and I was actually pretty active in the church community. I really enjoyed it. But there was a lot of just kind of like the church involved in my life at a young age, and then it kind of slowly deteriorated as I got older, just due to like different life circumstances in my parents' lives, and it just kind of like slowly kind of faded into the background, and that was when the interest in everything else became a little more saturated, because I mean I had always had that interest, you know, it was kind of always one of those things that's like you can look but you can't touch, and you know, so tarot cards are like the devil, I could never get close enough to one of them, or you know, anything that was outside of the church was kind of like I wasn't allowed to watch Harry Potter, and to this day I've never seen any of the movies or read any of the books, so people will always be like making, you know, references to that due to my spirituality, and I'm like, what? And it's just because my, you know, my parents didn't allow me to watch that because they thought that that was kind of like a bad influence for a really long time. But yeah, I mean, it was just kind of I liked to learn a lot of different things, and it was the books about mythology, and then it slowly turned into the occult, and it just kind of spiraled from there, and, you know, fast forward a few years, here I am, so.
So, like, to this day, what does your family think about your current spiritual practice?
Depends on the family. So my mom's side is, I mean, her one sister is like kind of weird about it, but okay about it because she sees that I'm happy. My mom just like lets it be, you know, she's fine as long as I'm happy, and she's happy that I'm making other people happy. And then my dad just kind of pretends that it doesn't exist. And the rest of his bit, because he grew up very, very strict Catholic in the Philippines. And so his whole family, him and his 9 other siblings, they're all, you know, much older and still very, very Catholic. And so that's kind of one of the things that they just like pretend part of who I am. They just like try to dance around that topic if it's ever brought up, or it'll change topics, but it's more of they just try to like pretend it's not there rather than like, you know, attack me for it, which is, I guess, better than it could be.
That sounds very Catholic. Like sweep it mm-hmm. under the rug.
Yes.
I was raised yeah. Catholic, so I can speak from experience.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But it's interesting too. We are really interested on this show in the different generational experiences, and we're about 10 years older than you, and I'm curious about your experience growing up at the time you did, because you were born in the mid-90s, and so your early childhood had the internet and different sort of media than we did. And I was wondering, like, do you consider yourself millennial or Gen Z?
I think I've always considered myself millennial, just because, like, I'm in that weird in-between stage of that. But, yeah, I mean, like, I remember when, like, having the internet in an iPod or, like, on a phone was, like, the future. I mean, I remember that, like, mind-blowing thought of having a small computer in your hand, but I also remember, like, never having a phone on me, or, like, not really having technology really play a really big part in my life. So I kind of, like, remember that transition of, like, not having it at all, other than like TV with the family sometimes. times to everybody being glued to their phones, you know?
Yeah, and it's interesting, too. I'd be curious on if there were any specific influences from media that kind of introduced you to witchcraft. Like, for most people my age, I'm 30, there was, like, the movie Practical Magic and the movie The Craft and those kinds of mm-hmm. things, and along with a bunch of, like, kids shows like Are You Afraid of the Dark and Tales from right. the Crypt and Goosebumps yeah. and things like that that really kind yes. of inspired a lot of people to kind of seek out some alternative ideas and things like that. Was there any type of media that influenced your path in that way?
Oh, absolutely. I think the first thing, I mean, the earliest thing that I can remember that sparked the idea that there's so much more to this world than I think people will, like, I don't know. I feel like everybody understands that there's more to it, but I think it's just like the idea of interacting with the stuff beyond that we don't understand was when I watched the movie Matilda when I was like very, very young, probably like 5 or 6. And I remember watching this little girl, Matilda, moving like a Cheerio across the table with her mind. And I was like, that's it. I'm going to do that one day. And so I kind of blame that movie for kind of opening that door, because then I was like, it was just kind of like, is that actually possible? And from that question, there became 100,000 more questions. And then, yeah, like you said, The Craft and Practical Magic was a huge influence. Goosebumps was like my whole middle school career. And then that was like all the books that I carried around. So yeah, it was a lot of that. And then I think it was the access, because like when I was younger, you know, I had access to the internet, and so I was able to just kind of like internet search anything I wanted. And a lot of it at the time was ancient Egypt, and because that was just like so intriguing to me. They just seemed like they knew so much for, you know, being alive thousands of years ago, and that just didn't make sense. And so I think that in itself too was kind of one of those things that opened the door.
Yeah, I totally relate to that about Egypt as well. That was a big influence on me when I was younger, and I kind of wanted to be Indiana Jones when I grew up, so I was always yeah. fascinated by other cultures and ancient civilizations. And I took hieroglyphs in college for a couple semesters.
No way.
Not very practical, but I'm ready to go to Egypt when the time allows. But, you know, it's funny, too. You mentioned Matilda and Roald Dahl. You know, he's kind of like a witchy author, too, in a way. He had the book The Witches. There's a lot of magic in his yep. stories.
Yeah.
So yeah, I could totally see why that would be a good influence.
Mm-hmm. The Witches is one of the most traumatizing kids' movies ever made.
Did that scare you, Dan?
Yeah, and I rewatched it as an adult, and I was still like, what the hell? Because it's like Jim Henson puppetry that's like really messed up. But
yeah,
it's crazy. I was like, damn, this is not good for little kids. But
and that's kind of interesting you bring that up, because, you know, as kids, you start to get introduced to, like, the archetype of the witch, and it's either one of two things. It's either, like, the sexy witch or, like, the old hag.
Yep.
You know? And that's yep. so fascinating.
There's
such
no
a dichotomy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of... There's kind of both going on in that movie, because Angelica Houston is this, like, goth sort of MILF lady, but then when she takes her skin off, she's, like, a serious hag. Like...
Yeah.
Jim Henson puppet hag.
Yeah, and you can even look at like contemporary, like Game of Thrones and Melisandre, who's like one of my top favorite characters from Game of Thrones, and she has this like necklace that's like a amulet that keeps her young, but in reality she's like super old. So yeah, it's kind of neat how that just in general the archetype of the witch has always been this interesting dichotomy, you know, throughout media and throughout the ages.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Olivia, you were originally born in Colorado And Scarlett tells me that you grew up in Oregon. Is that correct?
No, I grew up in Colorado.
Oh, okay. So if you grew up in Colorado, I'm wondering if your experience of nature out there had an impact on, you know, your early spiritual life.
That's an interesting question, because I guess I never put those two together, which is kind of ironic, because that's, I think it definitely did. And it's funny that you say Oregon, because that's one of my favorite places in the world. And my family on my dad's side, we would have a family reunion every year that we would drive from Colorado over to Oregon, and we'd camp there for 2 weeks. And like, there was something about that certain place that we would go in Oregon that, I swear to you, the trees whisper to you. Like, there was just something, like, there's just something there, you know, like something so, like, nature spirits or whatever, you like the fae, I don't know what it was. It's just every time I go there, there's just something so prominent that it's like the forest breathes by itself. And but I mean, yeah, back in Colorado, I mean, I would go camping with my friends a lot of the time, or because I lived so close to the mountains, you know, I could just kind of, I used to have really big trucks for my first cars in high school. I had an 87 Ram Charger as my first car, tiny 15-year-old like climbing into my truck. But, you know, I'd drive up there and I could just kind of like camp out in the trunk and park it somewhere and just hang out at night and see the stars. And I think like just doing that alone was, it, like, you just kind of get a weird connection to the other, if you will, whatever you want to call it, without other people around, and just kind of like spending time with nature.
Yeah, and in a way, in my personal view, when it comes to things like, you know, witchcraft or what it means to be a witch, it's to be comfortable with that kind of wild force within nature, to kind of try and understand that. And you know, I've always, you know, from a young age, felt, you know, really connected to that force within nature. You know, that's where I felt a divine presence, you know, and not somewhere in like a church, you know. So that's kind of why I fell down this path personally. But yeah, there's something about the woods and the wild, and maybe there's a component of fear there too, but it just kind of draws certain people to it in a way.
Yes. Well, and I mean, I remember, so when I was younger, I used to go to like a Christian camp. Like, you know, they would send the kids off for like a week or something and just be like, go. And it was somewhere near Estes Park in Colorado. And there was a point in the camp that, like, by the end of the week, we would kind of go, they would just basically, it was like toward the middle of the night. And now I'm like thinking about it, and I'm like, a lot of the things we did was kind of culty. Like, I think it's kind of funny. But anyway, you know, like, I'm probably like a 10 or 11, and they send all these kids just kind of like out spread across the camp to find like a space that they can just sit alone in the dark and like have time with God, I guess. And that was like the only point that I felt something spiritual during the whole duration of the camp. And I went like 2 or 3 years in a row. And I just remember kind of being like, I feel like there's something wrong with me. Like, there's not, like, there's no connection when we like pray or when we sing or you know, like kind of any of those things. It was more of like, I felt a connection with the community, but not really like whatever they wanted me to feel a connection to, until the point that they kind of like sent us out to sit out in the dark and like look at the stars and like connect with God. And like, I mean, at the time I believed I was connecting with God, but it, also I was kind of like, well, then why can't I connect to God in all the other ways that everybody else does? But it was just sitting in the middle of the dark in the forest alone was the point that I was like, there's something, you know.
That's interesting, because we had another guest, SJ Anderson, and he had a similar story at like a Texas sports camp where that was Christian, and he said that they did the same thing. They would like send you out into the wilderness basically by yourself and ask you to have like a connection with God or Jesus. And you know, I went through confirmation through the Catholic Church, and we didn't do it in nature, but we did sort of some something similar. It seems like there's in Christianity with youth groups, there's a lot of like retreat initiation things. It's like the first time you actually feel spiritual, like you're saying.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you need, it's like when Christianity actually gets kind of witchy.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
And that's interesting, Dan, you mentioning like a rite of passage, like an initiation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something kind of, you know, going back to, I think a lot of the reason people nowadays, our generation and the Generation Z, feel a lot of loneliness and anxiety is in part because we don't have any rites of passage or rites of initiation in our culture as much anymore. And so that's interesting that you kind of felt a deep kind of spiritual connection during that kind of transformative moment. And it makes me think about like witchcraft too. I mean, there's always this kind of big mystique among witches and like initiation. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, Olivia, but I've always kind of been alone, like a solitary. So I kind of did my own self-initiation when I was like around 17, I think, way back when. But I always wish I had like, you know, a community in the forest and we like did like a ritual initiation.
Oh, the dream.
What about you? Have you like done a self-initiation or anything like that?
I mean, not really like an initiation. I guess I just kind of was like, well, I guess I've been doing this, so I guess it's just a thing now. I don't think I ever had like a prominent moment that I was like, this is official. But yeah, I was alone up until I think only last year. I found my coven, and that's a whole different thing than practicing by yourself. That's totally different.
Yeah, I'm still out there looking for my coven. I'm trying to meet people here in Chicago.
Yeah, well, okay. Yeah, I mean, it could be like, you know, two or three people. I would just, for some reason, I fell into this thing that started out as like five and then it turned into like 46. And I'm just like, oh, so many people, but it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And with the internet, you know, you can find people really easily now, which is kind of a blessing.
So in your coven, is it all like people local to LA where you live now?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do they have like a good community there? Is it like it's a big city, so I imagine there are a lot of people who are interested in this kind of stuff.
Yeah. LA is one of those places that I would never have ever wanted to live, but at the end of the day, it turned into kind of like a blessing in disguise to moving to a city I had always kind of despised. And because LA is such a big place, and you know, if you are interested in literally anything, there is a subculture out here for you. You know, like it what you are interested in, it's here. You know, you'll find it out here because it's such a weird and broad city. I mean, it's like such a melting pot that you find people from all over the world and all different backgrounds.
That's interesting that you said you initially weren't a big fan of LA. How did you end up moving there then?
For my boyfriend.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, LA is such a crazy town. One of my good friends from college lives there, so every once in a while I'll go over there and visit. And I get what you say, like, about all the subcultures. I feel like LA is a place where people feel comfortable to just kind of be whoever they are. there's
yes.
a lot of openness for that, which is really cool. Here
yeah.
in Chicago, it's still kind of, you know, like, I don't know. Like, people, there's more pressure to just kind of be normal, I guess. It's still kind of salt of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Not as much, you know, different groups and things like that. Of course, it's starting to change, you know. But yeah, I feel like that would be a big benefit to LA, having all that kind
yeah.
of diversity of people and beliefs.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah, it is.
So you mentioned that you kind of were brought into witchcraft via the avenue of mythology at first. Could you explain a little bit more about what, like, the specifics of your journey into witchcraft, and how did you really get hooked to it, and how did you develop your practice?
Oh man, it was a slow simmer into it, because it was more of kind of like, well, at first you're kind of like, well, I'm just learning about it. You know, there's no harm in learning about something just to understand it. And it was like the books, you know, it any of my local bookstores or the library, or I just wanted to know about the things that people didn't know about. That was like my whole goal. So I mean, not only mythology, but I mean, like, deep sea creatures fascinated me for a really long time. All right. And yeah, and so it just kind of like spiraled into that. And then I think the whole almost like untouchable feeling of the occult, of like anything like mysticism. So I mean, obviously when we were learning about the Victorian era and how spiritualism became a thing, it just seemed so like mysterious. And if you tried to go out and grab it, there's just like nothing to hold on to. It was just kind of like something that people talked about. Like, it was just everything past this world just seemed to be like something rumored about. And I just had to know more about it. So, you know, like ghost hunting and the other realm and, you know, spirit boards and tarot cards and just like all the things that you shouldn't be interested in as a good Christian child. I was just like, give it all to me. And yeah, it just kind of like spiraled from just wanting to know what people didn't know, if that makes any sense.
So like, can you think of any author, when do you think did it fully click for you that you were like, all right, I've been doing this for long enough, now I identify with this?
I think I actually just like settled with the fact that I identified with it maybe 3 years ago. So not very long, but it was kind of like I was in denial for a really long time, you know? Like, I understood what I was doing, but it was more of like I was trying to justify it in a Christian light, which, you know, the whole other topic of I don't believe that there's anything wrong with being Christian and a witch, but also that's just like not who I am. Like, I just don't, you know, I don't follow the Christian faith. And that was a really tough thing for me to kind of come to terms with, because I had grown up that way. Like, that was what was true. And then all of a sudden, I had to like come to terms with myself and be like, no, this is actually how I am, because I've been doing this for, you know, a solid 7-8 years actively. And I've just been kind of like lying to myself. But I can't think of any particular like authors that I think brought me through that, or it was just kind of like an accumulation of everything that slowly I was just like, well, this is, I guess, actually how I am. And then I came out kind of like on social media slowly, just started posting a lot of more witchy stuff. And I didn't really like come out to anybody except for my boyfriend. It was just kind of like, it was just kind of like slowly integrated into my social media, and people were like, oh, I guess this is a thing now. But I think two, three years ago, I was like, all right, I'm an agnostic witch, and that is how it is.
Yeah, and you said you're an agnostic witch. So do you consider yourself Wiccan or pagan at all, or just kind of an agnostic who practices witchcraft?
Just really agnostic. And I mean, I think the reason I stuck with the term witch was just because it had so much rich meaning behind it. And it's just an interesting, it has an interesting, what's the word, like vibe when you say the word witch to somebody. You know, that could mean so many things to somebody. But I mean, essentially, yeah, it's just agnostic practitioner. I mean, that's, I believe that there are other things and there is something else out there, but I don't have a solid like answer as to what that is. But I don't identify as Wiccan. And I wouldn't say really pagan either, but I do think that both of them are really interesting paths.
Mm-hmm. So in your view, like when you're doing a spell, what you're channeling, would you say that what you're kind of working with, or the energy you're working with, is like a divine presence within yourself, or are you working with kind of the unknown divine force of the universe, or both?
I think a little bit of both, because I believe that, you know, belief in itself has a lot of power, and that comes from the person. But also, I think that you can absolutely call upon the energies that are around you and that, like, the world or the universe has to offer. So, and I mean, I also believe in the spirit realm. So, like, I believe that you can kind of pick and choose to call upon whatever you want, either the energies in the situation that you're manipulating, or on, you know, the energy of yourself, of a higher self, I guess. Or you could, you know, call upon ancestors, or, you know, spirits that have been with you. So I think you can kind of pick and choose what you're calling upon, but I don't personally have like a deity that I call upon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's interesting, kind of thinking about your view of the spirit realm. So do you think this aspect of kind of this divine force existing in the universe can kind of come through in different ways?
Yeah, like I kind of feel that it manifests in any way that works best for the individual, if that makes sense. So, you know, if somebody needs a certain energy, then they'll call upon that certain deity, which is why I think that, like, no matter what somebody believes, it's still going to work, because whatever they're calling upon, it may be different energies, but I don't believe that it's like a separate deity, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Did that answer the question? I feel like I just like totally derailed that.
No. That makes sense. It's interesting because, labels, you know, like are interesting too. And it's, people are always trying to like label us, you know, like what we believe and what we don't.
Yeah.
So it's always tricky, you know. For me personally, I tend to define myself, if people ask like what my religion is, I say I'm pagan. Though if people ask if I'm a witch, I'll say yes, but I usually don't call myself a witch in general. And so it's, yeah, and I don't really have a specific reason why or why not. It's just kind of interesting that these terms that we use are so tricky to define sometimes.
Well, and that's one of the most common questions that I get. A lot of the time people reach out to me and be like, I don't know, you know, what type of witch I am, or I don't know, like, I you know, they feel like they need to have some kind of label. And at the end of the day, it's like, I don't really have a label, but I mean, I guess people call me a witch because I have, you know, the Witch of Wonderlust, but also it's like, I'm just a practitioner. Like I love plants, I love tea, I love candles, but it's like, also I don't really identify as like a green witch, or, you know, whatever, like a tea witch. It's just kind of like, I am what I am. And I think the labels are more for other people to help define what I am, but it doesn't really matter to me, because it's just like, I am what I am. And I think people get caught up in those labels a lot more than they should, because while it is nice to have a community of other people who practice and believe the same thing, at the end of the day, like, you just are what you are. You don't need to kind of box yourself in with a label, because then you're like, well, if I'm just a green witch, then I can't do X, Y, and Z. You know, it's like, yeah, you can. It's your practice, you know, like, you don't have to conform to these labels. And I mean, these are very new labels, you know. You don't see like any of these labels 100 years ago. You know, it's she was a midwife, or he was a witch, or practitioner, or shaman, medicine man, whatever. You know, like there were different terms, but it wasn't like none of those things were boxing those people in. They were just practitioners.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. And yeah, I think it's fun. Like, I've made a blog post or a video that's like 10 types of witches, and those are kind of fun to do, but yeah, I mean, they're just kind
fun.
Of like, you know, like fun. I don't really mean anything, you know, by it, you know, in the sense that you have to define yourself. And And I think it's kind of more like preferences. Like, I'm just feeling very green witchy today. Okay. You know, I'm gonna make a stew and dry some herbs.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, there is such kind of difficulty. And for me, the tricky part comes in when people, you know, ask who aren't familiar with this kind of stuff, like, what do you believe? It's like, well, how do I sit you down and talk to you an hour? Yeah. Because it's going to be tricky. And it's...
Well, it's so funny. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay. What were you saying?
What I was saying was funny is, like, when people ask, you know, like, well, what do you believe then? I just read, I don't know what book it was. I'm going to have to find it later. But I just read this book, and the author put it in such good words that it was saying that, like, it's kind of like trying to explain an ocean to somebody who's never seen a body of water bigger than what's in their cup. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's exactly what it is, you know, because you're like, okay, you need to sit down and keep an open mind, because, you know, when you try to explain these things to somebody who doesn't even have like a basis of what you're explaining, it's really hard to kind of explain how you believe the universe works. That's a big question, you know, like, what do you believe? You can't just be like, God, you know, like, a lot of people can do that, but, like, we can't. And so it's just kind of like, I don't know, the universe, like, me, I believe in the universe.
Yeah, I think a label that I have been using as an easy, like, go-to is just seeker, because every day you're seeking something. Every day you're trying to learn new tricks for your bag of tricks or whatever. And certain things you drop at a certain point, and certain things you hold on to and, like, change around and let evolve. But, I mean, I don't know. The only consistent thing is that I'm constantly curious and constantly seeking. So I feel like that's an easy go-to label.
Yeah, I like that one.
That is a good label. I like that. Just out of curiosity, do you guys know what the Enneagram is?
Yeah, I do. It's like a numeric thing.
That's my zodiac.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So, like, that's what I use to kind of, like, understand people. And I always try to guess what types people are. And I'm going to go ahead and assume that you're a 5, just from the little that I know about you. But we can talk about that later on afterwards. We don't have to do that now.
Are you addressing me or Scarlett as a 5?
Yes. Sorry, you.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember. Yeah. I, in order to come up with your number, it's you add up certain, like, letters of your name. Is
it's
that correct?
Like, no, so it's like a personality test.
Oh, a personality test.
And yeah, that it's like one of the, it's literally the first thing in my life that I was like, oh, this kind of, like, hit me in places that I didn't want to be hit. You know, it'll kind of call me out on things that I'm like, well, that's true, but nobody needed to know that. But it's weird because it kind of, like, helped my relationship with a lot of different people in my life. And it just, like, kind of made me understand how they work. So I'm able to, like, better work with them, if that makes sense. But yeah, the Enneagram is kind of like my form of zodiac, if that makes sense. So every time I meet somebody, I'm like, you're this number, and that's why we don't get along, or something like that, you know.
I haven't looked at that in years, but I thought, is it possible to have two numbers?
Yeah, so you have, like, a dominant number, which is kind of like the number that you solely are based in, and then there are something called a wing. And so, like, if you are a type 5, then you're in the middle of 4 and 6. So you would usually have a wing, you would lean towards, you would also have, like, traits of either the 4 or the 6 type of thing. And some people can, like, kind of have an easy balance of both, which in my personal view, that's healthy. But, like, that's just my personal view on it. There's nothing to, like, back that up with science. Yeah, so you'll have, like, a dominant, and then whatever numbers are on each side of that number, you can kind of lean towards. So you would have, like, you'd be like, oh, I'm a type 5 with a 6 wing. And then depending on if you are like wherever you are mindset wise, if you're either in a growth stage or like a stress stage, you tend to react either in a healthier or an unhealthy version of a certain number that is connected to the 5, if that makes sense. There's a whole chart. You can like look at it and it'll show you like which ones connect to which. And
when you mentioned that, I don't know if this is for sure, but I want to say I was 4-3. But I could be wrong.
Interesting.
And I don't remember what those mean either. But 4 and 3 are in my head. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, you'll have to let me know when you find out.
But I what before astrology, actually, have you ever done Myers-Briggs personality tests?
I have.
I'm an ENFP. I know that.
Oh, I'm the exact opposite.
I have no idea what I am.
You're ISTJ?
Well, almost. INFJ.
That's kind of why we have a good back and forth between the two of us.
You know, with tarot, the court cards, you can match those to Myers-Briggs personality types, too.
Can you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've seen it online. People have done it. And there's 16, you know, court cards. So that's kind of what I use, like with you and the numbers, where I'll, like, meet people and be like, oh, you know, that's a Queen of Swords over there. Better be careful.
That's so funny. I was actually reading that the Myers-Briggs was made by just, like, two women who based it off of some guy who was, like, making just kind of assumptions about people. And they were like, yeah, that's a good idea, and just kind of, like, wrote a book without any actual background knowledge. But also, I was like, then why, like, it, like, how did it work so well? You know, it's an interesting history behind the Myers-Briggs. I think it's curious for sure.
What's your Myers-Briggs, Olivia?
Mine has changed 3 times, so I don't know. I've taken it in high school, and then I took it 2 years ago, and then I took it, I think, in the beginning of this year, and they were all different. So I'm actually not 100% sure.
Interesting. I know it can change kind of based on your circumstance. And I'm an E, like extrovert versus introvert, but I'm sort of an ambivert or whatever. Like I really can lock myself up and be a total hermit, but I could also be really outgoing when in certain situations.
Well, you know, going back to astrology, I mean, birth charts, I think, probably provide even more context than a Myers-Briggs test. So, and that's always mysterious, too. Like, people ask, well, you know, how does Myers-Briggs work? Well, you know, how do astrology birth charts work? That's some real crazy stuff. Everyone that I know that has, you know, gotten a birth chart is always amazed by how accurate it is or how interesting or how beneficial it has been in their life. So
that's cool.
Yeah. It's interesting. There's all these systems out there where we, you know, attempt to understand ourselves and the wider
world.
Isn't
that interesting though? It's just kind of like, we all just want to understand ourselves. And I feel like that's such a silly thing to say because it's kind of like you are you. So like who could understand you better than you? But at the end of the day, it's like, there's so many things that we just don't get about ourselves. And it's like that whole thought of that we only use 10% of the brain at a time. And it's just kind of like, imagine if we used 20% of the brain at a time, like we could be doing a ridiculous amount of whatever, you know. But sorry to completely derail this conversation.
No,
that's fascinating. I'm going to be looking up my number after this. Now I'm so curious.
Oh, please do. Please send it to me. I'm such an Enneagram fanatic. It's ridiculous.
Well, it's kind of funny. The last time I was really looking into Enneagrams was when I was trying to do fiction writing. And there was this recommendation, like when you create your characters, you've got to know what their Enneagram is so you can really like create them and sort of be realistic in the way that these imaginary characters think and feel and interact with the world. And I feel like astrology is kind of similar.
I mean, living in LA, there's so many, you know, film people out here, and I've had people write scripts and they've based their characters with Enneagram numbers. And, you know, I would read their draft script and it was kind of like, it's good, but then they would apply the Enneagram to it and these characters would just become these like real people. And it was just really interesting because all of a sudden they had like real strengths and real flaws and, you know, like real reactions to what was happening around them. And it was just kind of interesting that like once you apply something like the Enneagram or even like zodiac signs to somebody and you understand how those work, it's like you can, you kind of like unlock that secret of humanity, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of personality types, and I know you mentioned, you know, you had this coven, this group of people that, this community really that you have in LA. How has it been kind of working with other people and with your kind of your practice and all those different types of personality types? I know in my experiences with groups, like kind of witchy or pagan groups, a lot of times they disintegrate or fall apart just because everyone's coming from, you know, such different belief systems, structures, or personality types.
Yeah. Well, I'm just so lucky that I have the group that I have because it started out, I mean, it still is, but going into it, everybody understands that it's a non-denominational coven. So everybody has completely different beliefs, different practices. And that's kind of like the strength of it, is that people will come in wanting to learn from each other and wanting to teach everybody. And it's been going on for, I mean, I went into the coven when it first started. So it's been about a little over 2 years, I think, now. And it was just, it's gotten just stronger because now it's kind of like my second family, you know? And I mean, I didn't really actually expect it to be that. I just kind of expected to have a group that I could learn from and, you know, probably not like be super close, but all of a sudden these people just became a lot closer than I had ever expected to have them in my life. But I've never had another group really. So I can't really compare my group to anything else. So this is my first group and hopefully my only, but we'll see.
Did you ever think about when you were starting out, like getting involved in one of the more specific branches like Gardnerian or Alexandrian? Or did you always kind of know like I wanted something more eclectic and open?
I definitely needed something eclectic and open because I feel that the second somebody believes that whatever, so this is weird, but I believe that if somebody believes whatever, or if whatever somebody believes is like unshakable to them, I almost believe it less because in my eyes, even science is disproven all the time. So it's kind of like I feel like everything should be malleable. And with something more structured like that they already have kind of very foundational beliefs and structures and structured in the way they go about things, that kind of turns me off to a lot of different groups like that. So I needed something that was kind of like come as you are and practice as you do.
I'm curious with your coven, was this something that was sort of just organized by word of mouth, or was there like an internet component to it of staying in touch with people? And I guess just like for our listeners, like how do you go about starting one, and what do the meetings consist of, and what is the experience like?
So when I first moved to LA, I needed like a place, you know, I needed something that I was like, I kind of felt like got me. And so I found this beautiful little place called the Mystic Museum, Bearded Ladies Mystic Museum in Burbank, California. and I started going there a little too often, and the shop owners got to know me a little bit. And the in-house tarot reader, Mystic Dylan, those three, the shop owners and Dylan, were all talking about starting like kind of like a club. So it wasn't supposed to really be a coven at first. It was supposed to just kind of be like a club. And because I kept showing up, you know, Dylan started to get to know me too, and he was like, "You should join. We're gonna start this thing." And I was like, "Yeah." And so it was me and maybe 5 or 6 other people, and we just kind of met once a month, and it was more of like, it wasn't even like, there's not really like a structure. Like, I feel like people think that we come in and like we all put on our robes or something and like stand in a circle and hold hands and like chant or something, but really like we come in and we greet each other and, you know, hang out and talk and catch up, and then we just kind of talk about like any kind of spiritual or witchy thing that we had experienced or learned about. And it's really just like a meeting. Like, you just kind of, it's like a witch recess, you know? And then we'll have a little bit of a ritual. So every month people can come in, and we have a coven altar that's in the museum. So when people visit the museum, they can write down like something that they want to manifest, or sometimes we just get names. But they'll write it down and put it in our cauldron. And when we meet up, we kind of have like a little ritual that we all read off the manifestations or the wishes and kind of try to help manifest that. But that's really like the only ritual we do, because we are non-denominational, because we don't want to like be like, let's do this Wiccan thing. And like all of us are like, oh, sure, I'm not Wiccan, but you know, so we try to keep it pretty open. And sometimes we'll have handouts of just kind of like, this is what we're learning about this month, or, you know, whatever. But there's not really like rules, I guess. I think that's one of the biggest things that people think, that you go in and you have to like remove your shoes and, you know, like, I don't know, something like that. But it's very laid back and more like a family meeting than it is anything else.
Yeah, I'm curious too, because it sounds like you have like a solitary practice that you do and you explore, and then you have this group practice that you also participate in. Like, how do you see, is there a different feeling you get when you're doing group work? Do you think group work is more powerful than solitary work? Or what are your thoughts on the differences between those two styles?
That's a good question. I think that it depends on the group. So if you don't have a good group, you don't trust the group, or that group is just there for status or something like that, you know, then you're absolutely better off alone. But if everybody's kind of on the same page, like I said, with our rituals of reading all the wishes that we get in our cauldron, that, you know, you can feel the energy of people like wanting these things for these people. Sometimes, you know, people write down, I hope to get my new job in like next month, and we will read it out loud and then toss it in the cauldron and just say, blessed be, so mote it be. And you can just kind of feel that from everybody, just being like, you will get this new job, you will do it. And you kind of feel that uplifting energy of like everybody accumulating, and it's really, really cool, because it makes you feel good, you know, and it makes you just feel like this thing that this person is wishing for is really going to come through for them. But when you're by yourself, you can do so much more personal things. And even when I'm on camera, I will leave out a lot, like a little bit of a piece, like me charging something, just because that's a really personal thing for me. Or if I'm doing a personal spell, I mean, like, it's personal spell, you know, nobody needs to like know the ins and outs of it. But I just feel like when you're doing it for you, it takes a little bit more time and more energy, but you can kind of, it's almost like each one has its benefits. Like, group magic can kind of come into fruition, like more general, but larger scale things. Whereas solo magic can kind of do something that's a little bit more detailed and defined, but it's not going to have as much of a blanket, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I've done similar things in groups in the past where we do like intention setting and like burning the intentions in the cauldron and stuff like that. And in my experience, a lot of times you can feel it. I remember, Dan, when we were at that event and we were passing around this like jar.
Oh, yeah.
And we were all putting our intentions into it. And then both of us, when we were handed it, it made this weird, like, rattle. Like, you could really feel, and that was, like, after, like, 30 people had put their intentions into it. So it just, like, it had this quality
that
way more than, you know, just something, a little spell or ritual I would have done on my own. So there's definitely something to the fact that, like, you get enough people together all focused on the same thing. I think it is going to have a bit more of an effect in the universe. Though at the same time, and one of the things I've been reading about lately is it's really tricky when it comes to groups when they are so open and don't have a lot of like rules. On the one hand, people in our generation, we don't like rules. And the reason a lot of us left organized religion was because of the rules. And we're looking for something that doesn't have that. But at the same time, you know, when you go to like pagan pride events and you do this big group ritual, it can never get specific. It can never get beyond, you know, the like just love energy that you project. You know, it's because it has to appeal to everyone. It's not going to appeal to something specific as well. And so that's always kind of the tension. How do you leave something open so people feel comfortable, but get out of, you know, this kind of more generalized style of magic so you can actually like get something a bit more intense? And I've been searching for that, you know, for many years. And I go to the OTO every once in a while because I don't know if you've ever heard of the Order of the Templo Orientis, but they're a bit intense. And I was searching for like a group ritual environment that was a bit more rule oriented, I guess. I mean, I didn't end up sticking with that group or becoming a Thelemite, but yeah, I've been on this kind of quest for finding something that was, you know, something you really felt, something not, you know, living room paganism or living room witchcraft. I don't know if you've heard that phrase.
Yeah, no, I haven't, but I love it. I think that's why I feel that it's so important for people to just kind of understand what they want out of it, because, you know, I get a lot of people are like, oh, I can't find a coven, and it's like, if you don't know what you want out of your practice, your coven isn't going to connect with you, whatever, like if you create a coven out of just like wanting that. And I'm not saying that, like, you know, you need to know everything before you get into a coven. It's just like you just need to know what you want as a practitioner out of this. Because, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, when people are like, you need to love yourself before you can love somebody else. But it's like, at the end of the day, if you don't know what you want, like, you're just going to kind of settle for anything. And that's not going to be good either. So getting kind of like a solid foundation of the rules that work for your practice and like each individual's practice is a really big thing that I think people should focus on more before trying to find a group, because then you're moldable. You know, if you fall into a group without having foundations of what you believe is right or wrong or what you believe works best for you, then you're going to have all these other voices that aren't your own that are telling you what they believe is right and wrong. And I don't think that's healthy, even if they have the best intentions, because at the end of the day, it's like, those aren't your beliefs, those are theirs. And it's about you, you know, like even if you're in a coven, it's going to come down to your practice and you.
I'm curious, Olivia, to bring it back to your solitary work. What in your experience has, you know, been the most effective or fulfilling? Like, what type of spiritual work or spiritual practice in your personal witchcraft do you think has been the best or the most successful that you would like to share with other people that are experimenting?
Type as in like...
Like, is there any certain spells or like have you tried astral travel or just kind of, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, like what type of... what does your actual practice look like and what has like worked the best for you?
So I actually really love using, I mean, just visualization, I think, is a huge, 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 huge part that people really underestimate. 'Cause I've definitely done spells that I have been sitting at the DMV and the nice person at one of the desks, I was like, I just want to talk to her and not any of the other 25 people. And so I was just like visualizing my number calling over to her desk. And I just like did that for a good 10 minutes. And out of the 100 of people that were sitting in that room, I was called over to her and I was like, that was me. but, you know, I think candle magic is a huge part of my practice also because it's so easy, but so diverse, and so is sympathetic magic, which is like using something to symbolize whatever you're trying to manipulate. So, you know, spell dolls is a really, really popular way of using sympathetic magic, or you can use like a picture of like a house or a person or a pet or whatever. That's sympathetic magic. But those two things are kind of a staple, and then a lot of the time it'll come down to something that's like, I guess, simpler and less conspicuous. So it'll be little things that, I mean, I can't really think of anything like in particular, but just kind of like the way I clean my house, you know, or something like that, I think are big parts. I'm trying to think of like a certain thing that's manifested that's so, I mean, there were a lot of things, but some of them are like, probably shouldn't share on the air. let's see. Oh, so, okay. So my, so I was planning a trip to Thailand and my boyfriend was saying that he just needed $700 extra. I think I've told him this and he's in the other room, so we'll see. but he was like, oh, I just need $700 by, you know, the end of this month and I should be set. And I'm thinking like, I don't really know how that's going to happen, but hey, might as well. So I kind of just like put together a candle spell and was like $700 by the end of this month. And somehow like his insurance sent him a check for X amount of money. And then like his car dealership in some sort of way, because he was like changing from lease to buying the car, that they sent him a chunk of money. And then like this extra commission from one of his jobs, some money, and it all added up to exactly like $700. And he was like, oh, perfect. So now we can go on this trip. And I was like, yay, you know? and there's a lot of things that I think like I've had too many confirmations that this works. I don't know exactly, you know, step by step of how, but it does, just because there's just way too many things that have happened that are like such immediate confirmations that I'm like, this stuff works. It's just there is some kind of like structure to it. I just don't know what that is yet. I'm just figuring it out.
Do you feel like when you do sympathetic magic or candle magic, like do you have to get yourself into a specific vibration or state of mind for it to work better, or are there, what are like your best tricks to really make it the most effective, would you say?
Oh, good question. So my thing is that unless one of the biggest things, but I'm okay, so I'm not like an emotional, I'm not in touch with my emotions very well. So I personally believe that you want to leave your emotions out of the spell a lot of the time. I mean, like you should add a little bit in there because that adds to the vibrations. But you know, like if you're super angry and you're going to try to like even do a baneful spell, it's like at the end of the day, that's your intention, your focus isn't there because you're being clouded by that. So even if you're like super happy, you know, like emotions have vibrations that you can work with, but you can't work solely off of those. And then also, I think you need to understand how like you work as a person. So me personally, I hate deadlines. I won't do a spell if I know I have to go to work in an hour, because even though most of my spells will take a little less than an hour, it's like I don't want to be in the middle of it and then be like, oh, I have to get ready for work and just end it, because then I'm going to just have to start all over. Whereas some people work better under pressure. But I think getting into that mindset is a huge part of it, because sitting down and before you even start anything and understanding that it's already happened as you're like collecting your tools or whatever, like it's already happened, you know, like it's already begun. And so I think getting into that mindset of that, like, whatever you're manifesting has already happened is kind of a huge part of it. Because if you're just kind of, if you're doubting yourself while you're doing it, you've already shot yourself in the foot there. So setting kind of like the placement and just doing anything that you can that you feel adds more oomph to it. So some people like to work with the days of the week or the moon phases or, you know, a timing of the day or like certain herbs or colors or whatever that may be. It's just like whatever you feel like adds that extra oomph that makes you believe that it's going to be super, super powerful in your mind. I think that is the part that is really, really important. Because if I'm reading a spell and I'm like, I don't connect to any of these things, I don't feel like this is going to be strong at all, then it's not going to be. But if you read something and you're like, yes, all of these things make complete sense and this is going to be a super strong spell, then like you've already begun it, you know, it's already started.
Yeah, I'm very similar in that way, especially like I need to make sure I don't have any like plans immediately after. Like I need to put myself in the right mindset, mm-hmm. put myself in the right state of mind. And yeah, what you said about kind of your intention and kind of believing 100% that this is going to happen, and even like when you phrase things using like the grammatical structure like it already has happened, I think has been
exactly
a really good way to do it. Do you ever, since I personally came from a Wiccan background, even though I'm not Wiccan anymore, but I still do like cast a circle and call in the elements before I do a spell. Do you do that or do you just kind of jump right into it?
I usually just kind of jump right in. I don't think I've ever cast a circle. I mean, like, I don't really call the elements. I will cleanse the space and then like visualize, I guess, like protection around me, or maybe like I'll light some candles and I'll cleanse and I'll protect, but I don't do the whole like casting the circle, or, you know, like I don't have like a salt circle that I do every time or like call the corners. It's more of just kind of like, I just want to make sure that everything is cleansed and protected, and then I'll start my work. But that's usually that's a very quick thing, is, you know, maybe I'll wave some incense or whatever, like ring a bell, and then light some candles with the intention of protecting my space, and then I'm ready to go.
Yeah. And that's basically kind of the same function. For me, like the whole like casting the circle thing is more so just to like get my mindset in the zone. Because, you know, and also kind of that idea of, you know, like separating this specific time and this space from the rest of my day, you know? So anything that you... Mm-hmm. that you do to kind of just separate yourself from your normal life, I think, you know, works really well. Do you have any...
Yeah, exactly.
Do you, like, tend to create your own spells, or do you, like, choose ones from books or historic ones, or how do you go about that?
I like choosing my own spells. And if I have, like, an intention but not sure how to execute it in a spell, I will usually look up a plethora of different spells with the same intention and kind of pick and choose methods or like different ingredients or tools, anything that I may have on hand or anything that I feel like resonates with me. So yeah, I think if it's like, oh, I want to do a money spell, and then it's you know, one spell will call or for like a green candle, and I'm like, meh, and then the other one will just call for like one piece of bay leaf and that resonates with me more, then I'll kind of just like construct my own with the foundations of other spells if I don't really know where to start. But most of them are my own.
Yeah, I'm totally the same way. I do a lot of like sigils too, so I usually do like cast a circle and then I call in the elements. So I have my representation for each element. And then based on whatever spell I'm doing, I like look around and be like, okay, what else do I got? You know, if it's like a prosperity spell, like you said, bay leaves or certain herbs or, you know, candle colors and stuff like that. And then I'll usually like get in the circle. And at that point, in terms of saying things, I just try and like put myself in that state of flow and just kind of, you know, whatever's coming to mind as I create a sigil and then eventually end with burning it in a cauldron. I usually take a shot of bourbon too to help like feel that fire.
Nice.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Nice. I make my spells a little fun. It's always fun to hear.
Yeah, you should enjoy your practice.
Yeah, it's always fun to hear like how other people, you know, go about it. Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's cool too.
Yeah, Tally, the one that I do. Oh, I'm sorry. You can go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna before we started recording, you gave me your birth data, and I've been at first glance, I was like, wait, what about her chart makes her witchy? And then it took me. After looking at it, I'm like, oh, there it is. There's a few like interesting things about your chart that kind of go in line with the way you've been describing your practice, I would say.
Interesting.
I think you kind of were aware of your moon sign and your sun sign, but you said you're not like super versed in astrology. All right, guys, that does it for the free version of the show for today. We had a nice time giving Olivia a nice little astrology birth chart reading for our Patreons to enjoy. Gives you a nice little preview of what it's like to get a birth chart reading, and it reveals a little bit about Olivia's unique personality. But special thanks to all of our patrons who support us. If you would like to join our Patreon, check us out at patreon.com/cosmickeys. We have a website that is in the works that we're going to offer new content on the site. And, you know, we have big plans to just keep growing this enterprise. So if you would like to help us and support us, do so by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/cosmickeys. You can also check us out on social media. Our Instagram, where we post daily astrology updates, is at Cosmic Keys. No, let me say that again. At Cosmic_Keys_podcast. And our Twitter is at CosmicKeys777. If you guys can't tell, I'm recording this straight from my laptop speakers, and it's 4:04 a.m. on a Monday. But no sleep if you've got to get the forecast and the episode out on time. So here I am talking and trying to stay awake. But until next week, have an awesome week and enjoy all of the wonderful Leo energy that is going to be happening. And we will see you next week for another episode. Take care, guys.